If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference, this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
It's unusual that they would build a facade for an attraction so many years before they actually opened, because it didn't open until 1969. So for 5 or 6 years, it was just sitting there vacant. So rumors started to be spreading about how it was too scary, and they had to keep trying to work on it and tone it down.
45 years ago this August, Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion opened to the public. It was unlike any other haunted house or dark ride around, and in many ways it still is. Haunted Mansion expert Jeff Baya is the author of the new book, The Unauthorized Story of Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion. Jeff is also the host of Webby Award-winning Haunted Mansion tribute website DoomBuggies.com, which launched on October 31st, 1997. Jeff, you're both a musician and an artist. What do you remember best about your growing up years that led you to choose that path?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. You know, I always was drawn to being an artist. I would draw just all the time. It was interesting. You know, when I was a little kid, I was always drawn to packaging and marketing. You know, other kids would draw little cartoon characters or little battle scenes, and I'd be creating little packages of things. And so I'm a graphic designer now by trade. And so, you know, I don't exactly know where that interest came from, but as far back as I can remember, I was kind of drawn to advertising and that kind of thing. And I would just trace the pictures out of my picture books when I was a little kid. I think a lot of artists kind of begin that way. And yeah, I mean, I think that's about some of the earliest artistic memories that I have.
And the music at the same time or later?
Well, probably a little bit later. I mean, my parents got my sister and I into piano at the age of 5, and we were forced. You know, it was kind of, you're going to learn music. And I got kicked out of piano lessons a number of times as a child. So it wasn't until I was in junior high school, when I did the whole join a rock band thing and really learned to hone my keyboard abilities and learn to play the piano better. Yeah, and then through my early 20s, I was in a band, and we gigged around the Bay Area quite a bit and recorded a couple albums. So that was also something that I just had to kind of, that wasn't as ingrained in me as a child. I kind of had to discover my love for music later on.
And when did you discover your love for the Haunted Mansion?
Well, it kind of ties in with the art, I think. You know, the picture books I remember tracing out of the most when I was a kid were like my parents' Time Life fossil books and bones and that kind of thing. And we had a record called the Thorian Song of the Haunted Mansion, and it was the Disneyland official Haunted Mansion record. It was one of those records with a book that you could read along with the story. And I remember tracing the pictures in that and just loving it so much that I would break the records, because I was too young to think, take the records out of the album before you start drawing all over it. And so I had a number of copies of that album as a kid, and so I always knew the Haunted Mansion, you know, and my family would go to Disneyland once a year or so, and we'd always go on the Haunted Mansion, and I kind of felt a tie because I knew the words and I kind of knew the story. And, you know, when you're a little kid, you feel like you have some inside information, you know, when you have the record and you kind of know the story. So it probably started there, I think.
Fast forward to today, when you've really got the inside information with your Doom Buggies podcast about the Haunted Mansion and your unauthorized story of Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion here. How did you come to write your book?
Well, you know, I started Doom Buggies almost 17 years ago. It's been a long time, and I had been gathering information. You know, I'm kind of a Disney history fan, not just the Haunted Mansion, but Disney history in general. And the Haunted Mansion marks this very specific point in time in the history of the Imagineers, who were Walt Disney's theme park designers. And it marks that point in time where Walt Disney passed away, and they had to transition from his guiding leadership to not having him there to make the final decisions about a lot of things. So that was really appealing to me about the Haunted Mansion, like that kind of creative tension and the transition they made to have no Walt anymore. So I think, you know, all the stories that surround that were really compelling, and I had kind of gathered a lot of these stories over the years, and I've written a few articles for magazines and that kind of thing about the Haunted Mansion, and I knew there was a bigger story that needed to be told. I think that's really the reason I decided to write a book about it.
Let's look at some of those stories that make up the bigger story. You start by saying that Walt was obsessed almost with having a haunted house. Why?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and that's something that I tried to answer in this book. I've never really heard anyone answer that question. And I don't know that I really answered it. I don't think anyone really can get into the head of Walt Disney too well. A lot of people try, but there's a few things that are really interesting. In every theme park that he personally planned, he always had a haunted house in the plans. Before Disneyland, originally Walt Disney thought they would have a little theme park in Burbank across the street from his studio. And they were going to call that the Mickey Mouse Park, and there were plans drawn up for that, and some of them included a haunted house. And then, of course, Disneyland, some of the very early concepts of Disneyland also had a little haunted house on Main Street. So, of course, the Haunted Mansion didn't make it into Disneyland right away, but they were working on it as early as the park was developed. So, and then, of course, Walt Disney World has its Haunted Mansion in. But before Walt Disney World was built, Walt Disney was considering putting a theme park in St. Louis called the Riverfront Square. And they had blueprints drawn up and everything, and it was kind of near where the Arch is, where they were going to host it. And the interesting thing about that is when you went through the gates, you weren't going to see a castle up at the end of the main street. You were going to see a big haunted house on a hill. So, you know, Walt always had this haunted house in mind when he wanted to build a theme park. And, you know, it's really interesting. I know that when he was a kid in Kansas City and just kind of getting his start in the world of cartooning and filmmaking, there was a haunted house, or a house rumored to be haunted, called the Sour Castle in Kansas City, and it's still standing today. And one of Walt's friends actually was a descendant of the Sour Dynasty. So I kind of suspect that that may have put some seeds in his mind of, you know, towns always have that haunted house out in the hill, you know, off the beaten path. But I don't know for sure. But I kind of examined some of those ideas in the book.
What you do know for sure, though, is about the interactions with some of his Imagineers. What were some of your favorite stories about how he interacted with people like, for example, Rolly Crump?
Wow, that's a great question. Because all the Imagineers were so different, and they approached the Haunted Mansion in so many different ways, which really makes the story really interesting. Rolly Crump, of course, is really interesting because he was a younger Imagineer when the Haunted Mansion was in development. A lot of Walt's original Imagineers were animators from way back in the 30s and 40s, and then he brought them over to work on Disneyland. But Rolly Crump was a younger guy, a full 20 years younger than most of the Imagineers. So he had these different kind of ideas. When he first started working on Haunted Mansion for Walt, he was paired up with one of the older art directors who came over named Yale Gracie. And together they kind of designed special effects and different ideas for kind of stage magic that might go into the Haunted Mansion to make it intriguing and interesting. But then Rolly Crump went further, and a few years later, the Imagineers took a break to work on the 1964 World's Fair. But when they all came back to the Haunted Mansion project, and Rolly Crump specifically, he just thought there's a lot of haunted house cliches in here and, you know, bats and spider webs. And he thought this really has to be something different and special. And so he started coming up with all these crazy ideas with kind of making furniture with human aspects, you know, faces in the walls and human arms sticking out of the walls and things like that. And Walt was really drawn to that, but he didn't know what to do with it. You know, he looked at it and he said, what are we going to do with this? And, you know, the other Imagineers really couldn't help because they didn't really agree that it should be quite so off the beaten path. And so then finally Walt had this idea, well, why don't we make an adjacent attraction to the Haunted Mansion and call it like a Museum of the Weird and put all these weird things in there? Of course, that was shortly before Walt Disney passed away, so the Museum of the Weird never got built. But that's something really interesting about Rolly Crump that he kind of adds to the history of the Haunted Mansion. That's a really unique take on the idea of, you know, spooking and scaring. It wasn't the traditional ghost story or Halloween story. It was something totally off the beaten path.
What about what happened after Disney passed away? You have a whole chapter devoted to pretty much how the Imagineers clashed. What was going on?
Yeah, well, you know, Walt Disney was the man who would say yes to this and no to that, and then you'd move forward. And he, a lot of the Imagineers have said that he enjoyed putting people together that did not agree because he felt like a little bit of conflict will get the best product. And it's hard to argue with that when you see the results of what, you know, the Disney company produced under his leadership. But nevertheless, when he was gone and there was no one to say this idea is better than this idea, and there were two people of kind of an equal art direction standing working on a project, things could get a little heated now and then. So, you know, and really no one, I don't think with the Haunted Mansion in particular, I don't think anyone ever really came out ahead. They kind of compromised and they kind of put, you know, this in there and that in there. And probably Mark Davis, who's one of Walt Disney's nine old men from animation, he was working on the Haunted Mansion. I think his ideas probably carried the show for the most part at the end of the day. But in general, yeah, there really is not a great answer to how they decided to work together other than there's some compromise. And actually, a lot of the Imagineers, you know, they kind of are proud of this little bit and that little bit that they did in the Haunted Mansion, but a lot of them don't really view it as a success, which is really interesting because it's one of the attractions that has the biggest fan base of all of the Disney park attractions. But a lot of the Imagineers that worked on it, they don't quite see it as like a great success in itself, probably because they remember the conflict and the compromise that had to be made.
Which is mind-blowing because I wish I remembered the exact figure. In fact, how many people did see the Haunted Mansion when it first opened?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, it was very popular, of course, because they were advertising it like crazy for years because the building was built in 1963. For some reason that I don't quite know the reason it was built that early, there's some people have mentioned different ideas, but I don't exactly know. It's unusual that they would build a facade for an attraction so many years before they actually opened because it didn't open until 1969. So for 5 or 6 years, it was just sitting there vacant. And, you know, that's kind of the traditional haunted house story, right? The vacant house. So rumors started to be spreading, you know, and there were a number of years before the Haunted Mansion even opened. And so a lot of people had started to make rumors and stories about how it was too scary and they had to keep trying to work on it and tone it down and, you know, that type of thing. So it kind of had a reputation going into things. And so when it opened, it was an immediate success. I think about one week exactly after it opened, the park had its record attendance ever to that date, which was 82,516 people in the park on one day, which is actually an enormous number of people to be put into Disneyland Park. Even today, with many more attractions to take up the crowd in that park, that still is a very, very heavy traffic day. So you can imagine there were some people have reported 4 hours to wait for the Haunted Mansion when it first opened. So yeah, a great success.
Wow. And once they got inside that, we'd be very remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Mark Davis's contributions. What did they see that he had created?
Yeah, well, Mark Davis, of course, was a great character animator. He created Tinkerbell and Aurora and Maleficent, both in the same animated feature. He created some of Walt Disney's most famous characters. And so when he was brought over into WED Imagineering to work on the parks, he kind of brought the same talents. He could create characters and stage gags that were instantly readable. So when people went to the Haunted Mansion, most of the gags that you pass in your Goomba buggy when you're riding through the attraction, a good majority of them are Mark Davis gags. And he just brought this innate talent for creating instantly readable, humorous situations that he would create. You know, maybe a decapitated prisoner singing with his executioner together, and he's holding his head in his hand with his singing. You know, just instant gags he could come up with that you look at and you just right away know, like, what was going on. And so that's the kind of thing that Mark Davis brought to the Haunted Mansion. And I think that's, in general, the way the Haunted Mansion developed after Walt passed away, into kind of a little funny but with a little black streak of humor in it attraction that's really not too scary and really a little bit more on the lighter side, but it does have that kind of wicked streak in there.
No wonder people love it so much and for so many years. You really surprised me at the beginning of your book because you mentioned early on some of the most unusual technology in the mansion was created with illusions that date back to the 1850s.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, I think they were using magic lanterns, which is basically a way of just projecting ghosts. You know, it's another fancy way of saying projecting before there were film projectors. I think even in the late 1700s, maybe they started using magic lanterns. There's some history to that way back into time for entertainment and, you know, fake medium shows and that, you know, spook shows and that kind of thing. So, yeah, the history of the Haunted Mansion's technology, they project spooks on the walls. That's back to the earliest days of special effects. And then some of the most famous special effects in the ballroom are the appearing and disappearing ghosts. And that's, as you speak, an effect that was used widely on the stage in the mid-19th century. So just a wide range of special effects. It's really whatever worked best, that's what they did, whether it was new technology. You know, they have audio animatronics, which were robotics, which were cutting edge in the 60s when the Haunted Mansion was launched, all the way back to, like I say, these 18th century stage magic tricks. So it really runs the gamut.
And probably more so now with the innovations. What have been some of the newer innovations over the years since the Haunted Mansion opened?
Well, there's quite a few. You know, the remarkable thing is probably how much it's stayed the same, relying on these older stage magic tricks. But they have used modern technology to really punch it up. Most specifically, I think of the Walt Disney World version of the Haunted Mansion. When you go into the room near the beginning of the attraction where the walls stretch they use some new audio technology in there that makes it sound like you hear the ghost I was talking to, and it sounds like he's just flying through the room invisibly. You can hear him smoothly move all over the room, and it's really fascinating, the audio effects in there. Now, they don't have that at Disneyland, so in Disneyland it's still quadraphonic, and it's quite a difference because he'll just talk in one corner, and then you can tell, like, oh, they turn on another speaker in another corner. It's nothing like that at Walt Disney World. So that's a great example of kind of modern technology that they've used to make something really phenomenal out of a kind of a simple idea, just of changing the way they use the audio, but it makes a big difference.
As you were researching the Haunted Mansion and doing your interviews, what did you discover that even as a fan surprised you about the Haunted Mansion?
I think what surprised me the most is that most of the people that worked on the Haunted Mansion didn't really, you know, it kind of goes back to the conflicts and the division. They didn't really know the full story of the Haunted Mansion and, you know, how their part works together with some of the other people's just in history of the attraction. So I just found it fascinating that I have all these stories of Imagineers that remember very specifically their role, but a number of them have said, wow, I didn't know all of this stuff, you know, as a story. And that's really something I was trying to capture in the book, a way to see all of these different contributions and ideas and how they fit into a timeline and a narrative that really expresses, you know, how Imagineers worked in the time of Walt Disney and the challenges they faced when he was gone.
Let's choose one of your favorite stories that you share in your book and kind of whet the listener's appetite. What's one of your absolute favorites from the Haunted Mansion that you share in your book?
Well, let's see. You know, I really like the story of the Doom Buggy, which is the contraption that you ride through the Haunted Mansion on, because the Doom Buggy wasn't always going to be a part of the Haunted Mansion. When they first started dreaming up the idea, we're going to walk through the Haunted Mansion, similar to the Sleeping Beauty Castle, how you walk through and see little scenes. They kind of had the idea that it might be similar, probably a bigger scale with life-size scenes, but it would be a walking tour. And somewhere down the line, they figured out, you know, we have so many people coming to Disneyland, that's not going to take enough people through. We need to carry them through on a regular rotation. And so they tried to figure out, well, what kind of contraption can we use that will really take people through? Because at that point in time, most of the rides at Disneyland were like in Fantasyland, just kind of individual vehicles that would start and you get in and then they'd start going through and they'd come to a stop and you get in. And that wasn't really the kind of numbers they were looking for. And so an Imagineer named Bob Gurr, he worked with Walt Disney on the World's Fair and worked on the Ford Pavilion and making transportation systems. And, you know, he really honed his ability to create good conveyance systems for theme parks. And so then using what he learned in the World's Fair, when he came back and all the Imagineers came back to work on Disneyland, he came up with this idea to make a chain of carriages that were connected. And he was talking to another Imagineer and they were sitting there trying to figure out, like, how to make it work. And there was a candied apple on the desk and he kind of picked it up and was twirling it around. And it just occurred to him that, wow, what we need to do is have it be like this apple where it can spin. And he held it by the stem and recognize that it can spin all around different axes and but still stay connected to this one point, which was the stem. And that kind of gave him the idea for the Doom Buggy, which is the carriage that takes you through the Haunted Mansion, but it doesn't have wheels. It's connected to one track, and then it can twist you around and kind of lean back and forth. And it's almost like a movie director because every one of them turns the same way and shows you the same thing in the Haunted Mansion. So you really get to see specifically what they want you to see, whether you want to look at it or not. So it's really innovative and creative, and it all came from a candied apple that was sitting on someone's desk. So I think that's just fascinating.
Wow. You know, you go through the Haunted Mansion, you go through the ballroom too quickly, you go through the cemetery too quickly. What's one of the lesser seen ghosts or features that you would tell fans to look out for that they might miss the first time?
Oh, my favorite character. And the thing about the Haunted Mansion at Halloween, if you're at Disneyland, it's a little tricky because you can't go to the normal Haunted Mansion at Halloween anymore because they changed it to a Nightmare Before Christmas kind of attraction with overlaying all these characters and snow, and they bring Jack Skellington from Tim Burton's movie into the Haunted Mansion. So, but this is still there in the shadows, and at Walt Disney World, it's always the same, so you can see it. But at the very end of the graveyard, before you're about to leave and go pick up some hitchhiking ghosts, there's one little column, and there's someone stuck in that column, and he's bricking himself in. That's another one of Mark Davis' hilarious, or I don't know if it's hilarious, but I think it's really clever gags. You know, just a kind of a some kind of a corpse coming out of this column, bricking himself in. You know, it kind of has, I don't know, shades of Edgar Allan Poe and just some comedy. And it's just a little gag off to the corner, but I just have always really liked that set piece, probably because it was also painted into that storybook record album I was telling you about at the beginning of the show. But that's something that a lot of people miss because it's kind of in the shadows right before you turn off and leave the graveyard. So that's one of my favorite characters.
I'm going to be looking for that now because I've never seen that one. As we conclude here, Jeff, what would you most like your readers to get from your unauthorized story of Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Oh, wow. Well, I guess the overarching story of creativity here is that no matter how many different good ideas are coming together into one project, conflicts can be overcome and something good can come out of it. You know, like I said, I don't know that all the Imagineers involved with the Haunted Mansion ever really saw that they were creating something amazing, but step back 45 years and you look at the Haunted Mansion and it's one of the favorite attractions of Disney fans. I mean, lots of polls put it at the top or right next to Pirates. And, you know, it's because a lot of great ideas came together and some compromise was made and they put together something greater than the sum of the parts. And so I think it's just a great story of how, despite different ideas and conflict, there was a great victory for creativity.
Jeff, thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You and I have been listening to Disney Haunted Mansion expert Jeff Baum. Jeff's new book, The Unauthorized Story of Walt Disney's Haunted Mansion, is available on Amazon. And happy anniversary to Jeff's tribute website, doombuggies.com, which talks about all things Haunted Mansion, and which, as of Halloween 2014, is celebrating 17 years. You can also find Jeff's podcast, The Doom Buggy Spook Show, on Stitcher and iTunes. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.